Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, three lines down, where it says, Tlata Krei B'Truma Lamali. Why do I need three psukim by Truma? So just a quick reminder of what we've seen until now, because the Gemara is going to attack these psukim again and try to understand what they're all about. We have a pasuk that's found in Parshat Emor, which says, Ish Ish Mizera Aron V'Hut Tzarua Ozav. So the Gemara darshaned about Mizera Aron, that's Davar Hashaveh Bizarro Shel Aron, something that all Bnei Aron can eat, which is Truma. Then we said Tzarua Zav, that's Mitzorat and Zav, but a Zav Bal Shtei Riot, and a Mitzora Muzgar. So that makes it that it's Tuma that does not require Kapara. It's Tuma that only requires Mikveh and Hereb Shemesh. Lo Yochal Ad Asher Yitar, he may not eat in the Truma until he makes himself Tahor. Well, what's the tahor that we're talking about here? It's not been defined. Is it Herav Shemesh? Or is it until you bring Kapara? So that we get from a couple sukim later where it says, Nefesh asher tiga bo, v'tama ad ha'arev, v'lo yuchal min ha'kodeshim, kim rachatz b'saro b'mayim. So there it says Nefesh, and we said yesterday, davar shaveh l'chol Nefesh, something that everybody can eat, which is Maser. And after you have Maser, it says, kim rachatz b'saro b'mayim. As soon as you go to the mikveh, you're allowed to eat maser, which means tful yom is mutar b'maser. Then the subsequent pasuk says, ubar shemesh v'taher, the sun sets and you are tahor. That is explaining the yitar that we had before, that sunset is sufficient to make him tahor with regards to truma. Then the Gemara said, well, that is all fine and dandy as long as there's no need for kapara. But what happens if there is a need for kapara? Maybe when you need kapara, you would have to wait until you brought the korban in order to eat truma. To that, the Gemara responded and says, we have psukim by Yoledet. And the psukim by Yoledet tell us also a similar story. One pasuk says, b'chol kodesh lo tiga, v'el mikdash lo tovad melot yimei tahara. So that you only have to wait until melot yimei tahara, until she's completed the yimei tahara, which is the end of her tvulat yom aroch, that period of time until the sun sets. So one time it sounds like Herav Shemesh is sufficient. A couple of psukim later it says, V'chipir ala kohen v'tahira, which makes it sound like you need kapara, you need korbanot in order to be tahor. So the Megara wanted to reconcile between the two, and it says, that's right. One of them is talking about for truma, one of them is talking about for kodashim. For truma, all you need is melot yimei tahara. You just need it to be the end of her days of tahara. She's gone to the mikveh already on the 7th or 14th day, and now, either on the 40th or 80th day, she is now Herav Shemesh, she can eat Truma. Whereas when it comes to Kodoshim, she has to wait until Chiper Ala HaKohen V'Tahira. She has to wait until she's brought the Korbanot in order to be Mutar. And from that, the Gemara says, you can see that when it comes to Truma, even when there's Kapara, you still only have to have Herav Shemesh. But for Kodoshim, you have to wait until the Kapara is done. The last thing we left off with was, how do you know we're talking about Truma over there? Because we had a Braita that darshaned Bnei Yisrael, and then we thought, well, if it's Bnei Yisrael, then maybe not a Gioret or a Shifcha Meshuchreret. So the Pasuk says Isha, to include them. And the Gemara says, wait a minute, is a Shifcha Meshuchreret or Gioret, are they entitled to Truma? They have nothing to do with Truma. So Rava retorted then and says, wait a minute, we have the Pasuk later on, it says, B'chol Godesh Lo Tiga. And that, we said, is B'chol Odesh Tiga is talking about Truma. So now, if that's talking about Truma, you already see that the psukim are Mile and Mile, and we can say that it's talking about Truma. That's where we left off yesterday. But now, you have three psukim that are written by Truma. Two in Parshat Emor, one that says, Ish, Ish, Mizera, Ron, Butzaro, Uzab, B'kodeshim, Le'yuchal, Adesher, Yitar. That's one pasuk. The other pasuk was Va, Shemesh, Vitaher. That's pasuk number two. And pasuk number three is found by Yoledet, which is B'chol Kodesh Lo Tiga, Hele Mikdash Lo Tovad, Melamot Yimei Tahara. So now you have these three psukim that are written by Truma, and the Gemara wants to know, why do I need three psukim by Truma? So that's Lata Grei B'Truma Lamalei Tzriche. Di'i mi Adasher Yitar, if from the first pasuk that says Adasher Yitar, Lo Yviadana, but my Kotov Rachmana. I don't know, Adasher Yitar doesn't tell me what you have to do until you become Tahor. It's not defined. So, Ba'al Shemesh V'Taher. So that's what the next pasuk comes to teach you. Herav Shemesh is the answer to that. V'Katav Ranu Ranu Ba'al Shemesh. If you just had the pasuk, Ba'al Shemesh V'Taher, That's only when he didn't bring a korban, or doesn't have to bring a korban. Aval the bar kapara. If he does have to bring a korban, maybe you have to wait until the korban's done. Ad melot, and that's why you have the pasuk that's found in Yoledet that tells you ad melot you made ta'ara. You have to wait until Harav Shemesh, even when there is a korban. Vika da rachmana ad melot. Had I just had the pasuk of ad melot, havamina filo belot vila. I would have thought they don't even need tefillah. There, by the woman, there's nothing mentioned. All mentions is that she counts her days and she's done. Tefillah is never mentioned. So, Kadar Farana, Adashir Yitar. So then the Pasuk wrote, Adashir Yitar. So now we have all the psukim accounted for. If you wrote each, any one of the psukim, you wouldn't have known the information that's there. Tosafot, over here, it goes through other series. You see, Idi Ad, Asher Yitar Lo Yadana Bamai. There, Tosfa goes through all the different possible iterations. If you had these two, what would you have thought to come up with a scenario in which all three psukim are necessary? Because no two of them will teach you all the information that you need. Now, the Gemara goes on and says, according to that Tana who argues on the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel we saw yesterday, who says that when it comes to Tzarua Zav, in the Pasuk in Emor, Tzaru and Zav is Mitzara Muzgar, and a Zav Balshte Riyot. But there is an alternative. The alternative would to say that Tzarela and Zav is talking about Mitzara Muchlat, and a Zav Bal Shlosh Riyot. So that's a possibility. Then the word Yitar would not mean Herev Shemesh, but would mean Mechusere Kapara, would be until you bring your Korban. So now, according to the Tana that argues on Tana Debei Mishmael, Damar, Bezav Bal Gimariot, Ubin Sora Muchlat, Akatub Midaber, that Pasuk in Emor is talking about someone who has to bring a Korban, Vahayat Asher Yitar Adamaiti Kapara, and that Asher Yitar means until you bring your Kapara, Trey Kraei Bekodashim Lamali. Why do I need two Pasukim by Kodashim? I have the Pasuk here in Emor, which is at Asher Yitar, and I have the Pasuk by Yoledet, which is Vechiper La Kuein Vitahera. So why do I need two Pasukim? Tzrichei. Gita katav rachmana biyoledet, had the Torah only wrote it by yoledet, meshum de meruba tumata. Because she, her tuma is extensive. She is tmeya for 40 days or 80 days, depending if it's a male or a female. But that's a huge amount of tuma. So maybe over there you have to wait for your korban before your tahor. But, aval bzav, emelo. But bzav, maybe you don't have to wait that long. You don't have to wait for the korban, you could just do Erev Shemesh. Gita katav bzav. If by Zav lo hutar michlalo, Zav which has no heter whatsoever, you would think there, that's why you have to bring the korban. Aval yoledet emalo. By yoledet you have hutar michlalo, which as Rashi explains, hutar michlalo over here is that the dantara. She has a period of time in which she is not completely tmeyah. For the 33 days, the latter 33 days by a male, and the latter 66 days by a female, those days she has dam tahara. That dam tahara gives her the ability to be together with her husband, even though she can't eat from kodashim. So she has an aspect of her that is tahora, even though she's still seeing dam. So there's hutra michlalo. So maybe by zav, I would say you have to bring the korban. By yoledet, maybe you wouldn't have to wait to bring a korban. Tzricha, therefore I need both of them. So according to the one who says that it's two psukim by kodashim, the two psukim are necessary because I can't extrapolate from one to the other. I can't extrapolate from zav to yoledet, or not from yoledet to zav. Now the Gemara brings an additional pasuk, which is b'may miuva v'tamei ad ha'erev v'taher. That's a pasuk that's found in Parshat Shmini, and there it says, "Mechol asher yipol olav mehem b'motam yitma mikol kli yitzu beged or sako kol kli asher yaseh melacha mehem b'may miuva v'tamei ad ha'erev v'taher." So now, what is that speaking about? The Gemara wants to know. Lomali, what's that pasuk about? So that just sounds like you have to bring it into the mikveh, and everything's fine. Samar Rabbi Zeira the nigia. That's for contact with items. That's when you're tamei, and you make contact with items, you make them tamei. So the Tanya, vitamei. When it says there that, b'mayuva vitamei, yacholakol, sounds like you're tamei for everything. Tamalomar vitaher. It says then that you become tahor. V'ivitaher, if it's tahor, yacholakol, you think you'd be tahor for everything. Tamalomar vitamei, that it's still tamei. Which means after you go to the mikveh, you're tahor for some things, and you're tamei for other things. So there's this period of time when you're tevul yom, where you're cleared for certain items, and you still have problems with other items. Ha ketzad, how do I deal with that? Kan the maser, kan the truma. The same thing that we've said in the past, that tevul yom is mutar by maser, Sheni, but is problematic with regards to truma. Where it says v'ipochano, why don't you flip it around? Flip it around and put maser is the thing that has to wait until you have more than just mikveh. And truma is the thing that is done. Once the mikveh is done, you're fine. Which would turn out to be something interesting, because you would end up then with a scenario in which, till now we've learned that maser, with regards to eating, maser is fine at the point of tvoyom. But then, when it comes to negiyah, you have to wait until Erev Shemesh. So you would say that for achila, tvoyom would be fine by maser. For touching, you'd have to wait for Erev Shemesh for maser. That's what the ipochana would create. So, the Rishonim already asked, what do you mean? How do you eat it without coming into contact with it? So the Tosfot Rishonim, you look in it, take a nice long poker, stick it in your mouth, or have someone else put it in your mouth, come up with ways where you don't come into contact with it so that you can eat it. But it does come up with this somewhat unusual scenario where almost it's counterintuitive, where touching it would be more problematic than eating it. Where it says, Mistavra, Keichi de Chamira Achila de Truma, Me Achila de Maser. So Gemara, the answer to the Gemara is, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? Which always brings up the question of what were they thinking originally, but logically, Achila of Truma is more chamur than Achila of Maser, which we've learned until now, that Maser for Achila, Tvuyom is good. For Truma, you need Herev Shemesh. So, Hachanami, Chamir, and Negiyah de Truma, and Negiyah de Maser. So it's over here, by touching or coming into contact with the item, we're going to say the same thing, that Tvuyom is fine for Maser Shini, and Herev Shemesh will be for Truma. So that's why we have another pasuk by Truma to talk about Negiyah. It's a different category, but it's there. Vi by Tema, Negiyah de Truma mi hocha nafka. The Negiyah by Truma, we actually learn out from the pasuk in Yoledet. Because the pasuk in Yoledet says, b'chol kodesh lo tiga. Sounds exactly what we're looking for. Don't touch the kodesh. Azara le'ochel. Is that a warning for someone who eats truma? Or is that a warning for someone who touches truma? Talmud Omer, right after that in the Pasuk, it says, Vela Migdash lo tavo. Talmud Omer, b'chol kodesh lo tiga, vela migdash lo tavo, mekish kodesh le migdash. It connects the two. There's a hekesh now between b'chol kodesh lo tiga, vela migdash lo tavo. Ma migdash davar sheyesh bo netilat neshama, person who enters into the migdash v'tumat aguf, they are chayav karet. Av kodesh, davar sheyesh bo netilat neshama. So too, the kodesh, b'chol kodesh lo tiga, has got to be something to deal with losing one's life. B'chol kodesh lo tiga has to be telling about something that if you have tumat aguf would cause you the death penalty. That only can be true when you eat truma. Nobody gives the death penalty for touching truma b'tumat aguf. But you have a death penalty for consuming truma b'tumat aguf, which you have mita b'day shemayim for that. So there you have at least netilat neshama associated with that. So Gemara says, u'menigiyah netilat neshama leka. But when it comes to coming into contact with truma, nobody believes that you get karet or mita b'day shemayim for something like that. V'hai, da'afki b'lashon negiyah. Right, bottom line is it says, b'chol kodesh lo tiga. Even though it's talking about achila, since it uses the term negiyah, da'afki kamar negiyah ke'achila. Comes to equate negiyah to achila to say the same din applies. Just like by achila, the din is you have to wait for Erev Shemesh by truma, so too by negiyah. Right, so that's the end of this series of the Gemara. There are two major questions. Tosafot already points out both questions, which is, first of all, b'chol kodesh lo tiga, the fact that we're saying that this is talking about truma, is not like Reish Lakish, nor like Rabbi Yochanan. We learned in the Gemara in Zvachim, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan go through a series of questions about where do we know the Azhara for this and the Azhara for that, by kodesh, by truma. And both of them darshan the pasuk over here, b'chol kodesh lo tiga, not to be speaking about truma. They both say it's talking about kodesh, or something related to kodesh, not truma. So that, first of all, what's going on in our Gemara? Our Gemara only entertains one possibility, that it's talking about truma. Both here, when we talked about negiyah, and before, when we said b'chol kodesh lo tiga, we brought a braita that says it's dealing with truma. So Tosafot says there must be a third opinion who says that this pasuk is talking about truma, not kodesh, because we can't fit it in to Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan's opinions in the Gemara in Zvachim. The second thing that the Ri asks, which is an obvious question, which is, we started with the question of B'mayim Yuvav, V'tamei Ad HaErev, V'taher. There we ask, what's that pasuk for? We said, oh, it's for Negiyah by Truma. Then the Gemara says, oh, I have an alternative. We'll get Negiyah from Truma from B'chol Kodesh Lo Tiga. But then you're back to square one. What are you doing with the pasuk of What are you going to do with that pasuk? That was the original question. That question still stands now. So Tosafot in the end says that the pas v'nir l'ri, ta'achanami b'kodoshim mitukma, then we'll set up this pasuk to be talking about kodoshim. But why do I need another pasuk by kodoshim? V'atalishnuye d'lo neima v'ipochano, t'heheche d'gavi kodesh yechmir b'nigiyak v'achila, hachinami gavi truma. So just like by Kodesh, we make the Negiyah equal to Achila, Hachanami Gabi Chuma, we're going to say that Negiyah equals Achila. So what Tosafot says in the end is that we'll need the Pasuk to teach us that, Pasuk B'mayim Yuvah in the end comes to teach us that Negiyat Kodoshim is problematic. And just like Negiyat Kodoshim or Machmir, just like by Achilat Kodoshim, so too by Chuma, Negiyat Chuma will be the same as Achilat Chuma. Right now we move on to the next piece of our Mishnah, which is Tzu'adaka v'krut shofcha. We said both of those before are problematic vis-a-vis Truma. So Mantana Mishtamer de Biapsula de Oraita Achla. Which Tana says that a woman who is waiting for a Bia that will make her Psula is still entitled to eat? Because in the Mishnah it says that a woman who's married to a Kohen, who becomes a Tzu'adaka in the middle of their marriage, she's allowed to continue eating truma as long as they don't have biyah anymore. If they have biyah, he is poselota because she is then a chlala. And since she's now a chlala, she will not be entitled to truma anymore. But as long as they don't have biyah, then she is entitled to continue to eat truma. So this is a woman who's waiting for a biyah psula. As soon as her husband has biyah with her, she's out. But until she does, she's entitled to eat truma. Who says that? Amar Rabbi Lazar, memachloket shnuya, v'Rabbi Lazar v'Rabbi Shimoni. It's a machloket, and that is the opinion of Rabbi Lazar v'Rabbi Shimon, where we had the machloket earlier on in the Mishnah, back on Daf Nun Vav, where there was a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lazar v'Rabbi Shimon about a woman who gets engaged, has erusin with someone who is a biapsula to her. Is she entitled to truma? Until she has nisuin, or until she has the biapsula. So there we had an argument as to whether someone who's waiting for a biapsula or not is entitled to truma. Mina Torah, irusin sufficient to grant the woman truma. Midrabanan, you have to wait until nisuin. But in a case where either the nisuin was postponed because of some problem with the husband, is she then entitled to truma? Can she eat truma? Even though in the end, if she has a biya, she can have a biapsula. So there we had a machloket, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. So Gemara is saying here, so too over here, our Mishnah has to be authored by Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, who say, Biyab Sula, even if you're waiting for a Biyab Sula, you're still entitled to Truma until you have that Biyab Sula. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu Teimer Rabbi Meir. Even Rabbi Meir can be the author of our Mishnah here. Shani Ocha Shekvar Achla. Over here, she already had eaten Truma. In the case where she's getting married, she has Kiddushin, and then she's awaiting a Biyab Sula by Nisuin, there she never got the entitlement to Truma. Over there, Rabbi Meir says, no go, if she's waiting for a Biyab Sula. Over here, she already ate. She's already entitled to Truma. And now she's going to lose it. So losing it is harder than trying to get it in the first place. So what Rabbi Meir will say, when you're trying to get it in the first place, Biyab Sula is not sufficient. But if you already have Truma, waiting for Biyab Sula is not going to automatically render you unfit until you have that Biyab Sula. For Rabbi Lazar, Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, Blazer and Pedat here argues on Rabbi Yochanan says, Shvar Achla lo Amrinan. We don't invoke that principle of Shvar Achla, Dilo Temahochi, because if you don't say that, Bat Yisrael Shani Seit the Kohen. A Bat Yisrael that marries a Kohen, Umeit Ba'ala, her husband passes away. We know that when her husband passes away, she loses her right to Truma unless she has Zera, unless she has offspring. Tochal. So in a case where she doesn't have offspring, she should continue eating. Shvar Achla. Because she already was eating. Meaning that if already eating is sufficient to keep you eating truma, then when her husband dies, she should continue to eat truma. Rabbi Yochanan says they're not the same. We saw this answer earlier in the Masechta. Ha'otam paka kinyanei. Ha'ka lo paka kinyanei. In the case of the husband that passes away, she's no longer kinyan kaspo de kohen. The relationship's been severed because her husband died. So now she's not entitled to truma. In the case of the Ptsua Daka, their relationship is still alive. He still is married to her. They still have a kinyan kasvo relationship. So kvar al-chla is more relevant when you still have a relationship that's alive. And that's the situation over here. So now the Mishnah continues. Ezehu b'tzu adaka. Just to note that this is our Gemara, it's in the Bavli. The Yerushalmi is much more extensive over here than the Bavli, because I can see that because Tosfot keeps quoting the Yerushalmi to try to understand the Gemara over here. So the Yerushalmi weighs heavily amongst the Rishonim in explaining our Gemara here, understanding the Gemara over here, because it's more extensive than the Bavli, and so they're trying to take the Yerushalmi and figure out what's going on inside of the Bavli. So Gemara says, Tanu Banan, Ezu Ptsua Daka, what is considered to be a Ptsua Daka, which is in our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, Kol Shenipsu Beitzim Shelo, Vafilo Achat Mehen, that any one of his testicles that have been crushed or injured in some way, that is enough to render him a Ptsua Daka, whether one or both of them has been injured. Vafilo Nikvu, even if they were punctured, Vafilo Nimoku, or they either decaying, they dissolved, they are somehow rendered useless here through Nimoku. Vafilu chasru, or even if they're missing a piece from them. All of these things are problematic in terms of Ptsua Daka. Amar Rabbi Yishmael benosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, shemati mipi chachamim bekerem biyavne. I heard from the chachamim ready in Kerem biyavne, ko she'ein lo elo beitz achat, anybody only has one testicle, einu elo sritz chama. He's the equivalent of having a congenital problem. V'kasher, and therefore he's fine. Sris chamas agadatcha? What do you mean? How could it be called a sris chamas? Sris chamas, when you're born with it this way. It's not talking about tzua daka, it's talking about where there was an injury that happened here. El rei harehu kis sris chama. He's similar to a sris chama, v'kasher. And therefore he is kasher. Okay, so now, what is the relationship between Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and the Tana Kamo? Is he arguing on him? Is he qualifying him? What exactly is transpiring over here with regards to this? So there's a large Tosafot here that already starts to discuss this issue. And again, he invokes the Yerushalmi in order to try to understand this. And there are three ways that the Rishonim explain this. Some Rishonim simply explain that Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is qualifying the Tana Kamo. He does not disagree with the Tana Kamo. He's just saying that when you have one testicle, you are okay. But didn't the Braita before, the Tana Kama said that the crushing of one testicle, injury of one testicle is enough to render you pasul? The answer will be that that's talking about when it's an injury. But here, Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan is talking about a case where he is a sris chama, it's congenital. Didn't the Gemara just ask that he's not congenital? The question is more nuanced then. The question is not about congenital or not. It's talking about the nature of the problem. Congenital is where you're unable to have children. That is where they call that sris chama. In a case where you're born with a physical abnormality here, that's not called sris chama anymore. It's called an injury from birth. It might be congenital, but it's an injury from birth, and that's what doesn't allow you to be molid. So that'll be a nuanced difference over here, that even though sris chama is a problem, congenital problem, where the person's unable to give birth, but he's totally intact. He's fine. Everything that you see, all the organs are intact. There's no signs of physical problem. But we know that he can't be Yorei B'Chachetz, it's something that prevents him from being Molid. That's called a Sritz Chama. So that's the question of the Gemara over here. Over here, where there's a physical abnormality or congenital problem physically, then that shouldn't be called Sritz Chama. So when it says, it's just like a Sritz Chama. So that'd be the way that those Rishonim learned, that Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is not arguing, but simply saying, that is by Sritz Chama, he's okay, by Tzua Daka, it's problematic. That's one way to learn. The way that the Rabbeinu Tam learns, he's the one who quotes the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Tam, and the other Rishonim follow this, says that there's a difference here between Tzua Daka and what we call Krut Shavcha. Over here, the difference is whether the testicle was crushed or whether the testicle was severed. So in the case where it's severed, which we're going to see upcoming, it's based on the Gemara upcoming, that severed and crushing have the same din. Over here, there'll be a slight difference, which is that when one of the testicles is crushed, then he is considered to be a Ptsua Daka. When one of the testicles is severed, then he is not considered to be a Ptsua Daka. And that's what Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is saying over here, that when it's severed, you're still okay. There's a difference between severed and crushed. The Gemara says in a second that that is the case. Then what Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan is saying is no. That by one testicle, there'll be a difference. That by severed, it'll be different. And the Rabbeinu Tam, based on the Yerushalmi, talks about the fact that there's a difference between the left and the right testicle. And so he says that if one has to go for a medical procedure and has a choice of which one to sever, you should sever the left one and not the right one. Because it makes a difference according to the Yerushalmi. This is quoted by the Ramah. So when the Ramah quotes it, the Halacha, he mentions that there are those that say there's a difference between the left and the right testicle. But in the end, he says that we don't subscribe to that. But he does mention this difference that the Rabbeinu Tam and other Rishonim mentioned based on the Yerushalmi. There's a third view, which is simply that Rabbi Yishmael Berosh Rabbi Yochanan Merboka is arguing, period. That one testicle crushed, according to the Tanakhama, is problematic. According to Rabbi Yishmael Berosh Rabbi Yochanan, is kosher. Those are the three different approaches Rishonim take. So that's the three different ways to look at Rabbi Yishmael Berosh and Rabbi Yochanan Merboka. One is that he agrees with the Tanakhama, and he's simply talking about a Sris Chama and not Sris Adam. The second one is to say that he's talking about the type of injury is different. That's Rabbeinu Tam and others, which is that severing is different than crushing of one testicle. And then there's the third approach, which is that they do argue. They just argue. They both are saying about it, one crushed testicle, Sris Adam, and they argue about that. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Vinikev lo molit. But someone who has a puncture in the testicle is unable to give birth. Vau gavra, the salik the diklo, wasn't there a case where this man climbed up a tree? Vitcharze silva, the beitzim, and he got punctured by a thorn on the tree when he was climbing up, it punctured one of his testicles. Vinafak mina kachut demugla, and was expelled from him some sort of white discharge or pus that came out of the testicle. Afterwards, volid, and then his wife gave birth to children afterwards, so he was able to procreate. Ha shalach Shmuel lekamei derav. Shmuel sends to Rav Amar Leit, Sev v'chazer al banav ma'ein him. Go check out where his children are from, because this guy is unable to procreate, and therefore you have to question how his wife got pregnant. It must be that there's some extramarital activity going on here, otherwise his wife would not have been pregnant. So you see, we have a case where he gave birth, but it may not have been his children that she was giving birth to. Tosafot quotes, and this is what Roni was alluding to. Tosafot over here says, first of all, v'teima, because we find that people who have a severed testicle are able to give birth. We have evidence of the fact that they are giving birth. So we see that they do have the ability to procreate. That's number one. And number two is the Yerushalmi, again, talks about this possibility that someone can procreate in certain situations. And therefore, the Ri gives an interpretation here about the different testicles, the left and the right, being different. And based on that, one would be, if it's the left one, he's still able to procreate. If it's the right one, he's not able to procreate. But what you see from here is that that is an important part of the distinction that's being made here. By Ptsua Daka and Krut Shofcha, a derivative of that is that they can't procreate. Just because you can't procreate doesn't mean that you are Ptsua Daka Krut Shofcha. But the other way around, if you're designated as a Ptsua Daka Krut Shofcha, then it must mean that you can't procreate. If you can procreate, then you're not a Ptsua Daka and Krut Shofcha. So that's the distinction that Tosfot draws because of this fact that he says we have evidence of the fact that people are giving birth with one Beitza. And we can't go out and say all of them have extramarital affairs here, it's all coming from other people. That's just not what's happening. So he says we have evidence of the fact that they're able to reproduce. That he says, that already says that they're not considered to be Ptsua Daka Krut Shofcha. So that's, again, part of the definition of Ptsua Daka and Krut Shofcha is not only the injury, but is also the fact that they can't procreate. Again, the reverse is not true. Just because you can't procreate doesn't mean that you're Ptsua Daka or Krut Shofcha. All right, so now, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ptsua Daka bidei shemayim kasher. So here comes in, this is why many connected to the Yerushalmi is because of this statement of Shmuel, which appears in the Yerushalmi connected to Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rabbi Yochanan, and Broka, and that's how we got the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam before, in Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So because he was based on this Gemara, which is that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, "Ptsua Daka bidei shemayim kasher." Congenital problems, where there is a problem with the testicle congenitally, that is not a problem of Ptsua Daka. Now again, he may not be able to be molid, he might be a seris, but he's not considered to be a Ptsua Daka. Amarava, I know the Karina and Ptsua, below Karina and Haptsua, that's the girsa that Rashi has, which is, that's how we know it's written Ptsua, without a hay on it. Versus Haptsua. The difference being, according to Rashi, is Ptsua means that someone who had their testicle actively crushed, which means Ptsua Daka is describing how the testicle got crushed, rather than Haptsua Daka, which is describing the individual who has a crushed testicle. So if you're describing the person who has a crushed testicle, then it's irrelevant how it got crushed. As long as he has a crushed testicle, it would be problematic. That would come out of the word Haptsua. Versus if you just said Ptsua Daka, which is the way it is written in the Torah, that indicates a testicle that was crushed. And therefore it means it has to have been actively crushed. And that's the difference here. Rova is proving what Shmuel says from the Lashon of the Torah. Then There is another girsa, you could see that on the side here, the Masorah Deshas brings it down, which is based on Rabbeinu Chananel, who says that Tzerech Lamar Tzia. There's a difference between Patsua and Tzia. Again, similar to what Rashi describes here between Patsua and Hapatsua. Patsua means something that was actively crushed, whereas Tzia means something that is crushed. It is the definition or a noun phrase that says a Tzia Daka is someone who has a crushed testicle. It doesn't tell you how. It just simply tells you the information about them. But a Tzua would be the active crushing of the testicle. So that's the difference in the Lashon. All right, so now, Matnita Tano, the Baraita says, Nemar lo yavu Tzua Daka, the Nemar lo yavu mamzer. Malahalan bide Adam, Afkan bide Adam. So just like a mamzer, which is juxtaposed in the psukim to lo yavo tzua daka, is juxtaposed to the pasuk lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem. So just like a mamzer is a product of bidei adam, afkan bidei adam. So too over here, it's bidei adam. Now that is not so simple, because production of a mamzer is really twofold. There is bidei adam, because it comes from a biyah psula, it comes from an improper relationship. So that part is bidei adam. But the fetus itself is created bidei shamayim. So how are you so sure it's bidei adam? And there actually in the Yerushalmi is an opinion that even a sris or even a psua daka min shamayim is problematic. And he learns it from the same hekesh that we just brought in the bright over here. He says no, that mamzer is really bidei shamayim because the baby that's born is created bidei shamayim. So too. So it depends which part you focus on in terms of mamzer. Mamzer is a product of human intervention, in a sense. They create the mamzer by having the illicit relationship, but it's also a partly bidei shamayim, because the mamzer is created by Hashem. The baby, the fetus, grows up, meaning that's all a product of min shamayim. That's not a product of bidei adam. Even though adam caused it, it's still just a creation of bidei shamayim. So you could take it either way. Here, clearly, our braita follows the position that it's bidei adam. So, Amar Rava, tzua bikulan, dach bikulan, krut bikulan. So this is the statement that we said before, that it applies to anything. Tzua applies to all of them. Dach, being crushed, also applies to all of them. And krut is by all of them. Tzua bikulan, what does that mean, that tzua is with all of them? Ben shenifza gid, whether the member is crushed. Ben shenifzu beitzim, whether the testicle is crushed. Ben shenifzu chutei beitzim, or whether the spermatic cords that carry from the testicles to the prostate, I mean, there's other pieces along the way there, but those pipes, those tubes that go, even if they are crushed, that's also problematic. So all three of these are subject to tzua. Even though the pasuk says tzua daka and krut shefcha, it doesn't mean that those are limited. Tzua applies to any part of that reproductive system. Dach, also bikulan. Ben shenid dach hagid, whether it is that the gid is flattened. Ben shenid chua beitzim, whether it is that the testicles are flattened out. Ben shenid chua chutei beitzim, whether it's the spermatic cords that are flattened out. Krut bikulan. So too, severed is by all of them. Ben shenichrat hagid, whether the member has been severed. Ben shenichrutu beitzim, whether the testicles have been severed, and whether the spermatic cords have been severed, all of these are problematic. So he's saying that tzua daka and krut shefcha are not specific. They're just telling you, and we're going to see this in a second, the normal case. The normal case of the injury by the testicle is nifzu, is some sort of wound or crushing. And the usual problem by the member is nichritu, that it's severed. That's usually where the problem is. The others are less likely to be problems, but it doesn't mean that they're limited. Tzua applies to all of them, so does nichritu apply to all of them, the same as nidach. Any injury that causes the problem is by all of these parts. So amalei, how mi rabbanan lerava, mi mai dai tzua daka boto makom. How do you know that tzua daka is referencing the area of the reproductive system? Ema mi rosho. Let's say that tzua daka is that he got an injury to his head. Amalei mendelo mana bei dorot, because over there it does not enumerate generations. And all the other psulim that are mentioned there in the psukim, mamzer is the first one, then you have Moavi and Amoni, then you have Mitzri and Adomi, all of those mention either Dor Shlishi, Dor Asiri, they all mention a certain amount of generations afterwards. Even mamzer, which is permanent, says bo yavo Dor Shlishi, says you can't, even the third generation can't come, always mentions generation. By Tzua Daka, Krut Shefcha, it doesn't mention generations. What is that? Shvamina boto makom. It's clear that it's talking about that part of the reproductive system. And again, this re-emphasizes the idea that these injuries cause problems with the ability to procreate. Because he's saying, basically, dorot are not mentioned here. Why aren't dorot mentioned here? Because this will render him unable to procreate. So that's how I know. Where it says, v'doma haidlo manabo dorot, diyuhu dasur breu barbare kasher. Maybe the reason it doesn't enumerate dorot over here is because that individual is problematic. But his child or grandchild are kasher. So how do you know that the dorot here is an indication of the fact that he can't procreate? Maybe it just simply means he's pasol, but not his offspring. So Mar says, "Dumiya de krut shavcha." It's similar to krut shavcha. Ma krut shavcha b'otom makom. Just like krut shavcha is definitely in the reproductive area, afhainami b'otom makom. So too, tzua dakah is not otom makom. The obvious question is, krut shavcha gufe. Krut shavcha itself, mimai de b'otom makom. How do you know it's in the reproductive area? Ema misfatei. Maybe it's his lips. Krut shavcha is someone whose lips have been severed, meaning that his saliva comes out and pours out because his lips have been severed. Shavcha aktiv, b'makom sheshofech. So it's that it's a place that normally discharges, not a place that occasionally or only after the cut will discharge. It's an area that discharges even without the injury that's there. So Gemara says, v'ema michotmo. Let's say it's his nose. His nose could drip. And therefore it has a shficha even without a problem. And certainly if it's severed, it's going to drip. So it says, miktiv b'shafuch. It doesn't say in an area that is dripping. It says krut shofcha. It says krut shofcha, which means mish al yidei krita shofech. Someone who causes leakage because of the injury. Shalo al yidei krita inu shofech. But if it's not injured, it doesn't shofech. So ela mikaleach. It doesn't drip out, but rather it shoots out. The fiki hai, di shofech. Exclude the case where it drips in both instances. By the nose, even before the krita, it drips. That's what a nose does. It drips or it leaks. So that's what happens even without the injuries. Now, krut shofcha, when you cut it, that it drips or that it leaks, that's not because of the injury. It did that even before the injury. Whereas by the member, beforehand, it used to be mikaleach. It used to, when he went to urinate, or when he was procreating, it used to come out in a flow. It used to flow out properly. But then, krut shavcha, when it's severed, it no longer flows out, it leaks or drips out. So that's the difference. The krut shavcha renders him a shofech. That renders him to be leaky or drippy, and that's only true by otom makom. And because of that, we now know that krut shavcha is b'otom makom. And the Hekesh de Ptzua Dakah tells us also it is bi'oto makom. Again, over here, the Yerushalmi has a slightly differently, but and it says Ptzua Dakah. The word Dakah means low down. Means very low down. So what's the lowest point of the body? So there the Gemara says Ptzua Dakah is talking about the testicles. Because when a person is sitting, they hang below the body, and that's the lowest part of the body. So Ptzua Dakah is at the lowest point of the body. He's talking about the testicles, and that's how they know in the Yerushalmi that it's talking about Oto Makom. But in Tanita Tana, in a Braita, we have Nemar lo yavo Ptzua Dakah, but Nemar lo yavo Mamzer, Mala Halan Boto Makom, Afkan Boto Makom. Just like the Yovo Mamzer is a product of the reproductive organs, so to over here, the Ptzua Dakah is related to the reproductive organs. Okay, now, the Gemara talks about different types of injuries here. Nikev lamata miatara, shekenegdo lamala miatara. In the Mishnah, if you remember, it says that a krut shofcha is only a problem if it is lamala miatara. The atara is the end of the member where it starts to decline towards the tip. So as soon as it starts to decline towards the tip, that's called the atara, the crown. It's usually the area of the Brit Milah. That's the area that's the Atara. If the injury is in the Atara, it's not a problem. Meaning that if there's a severing or a problem during the Atara area, there it's not problematic because the Gemara sees it as being flesh and not being in the Ikar area of the member. If it's Lamala, Lamala means towards the body, above the Atara, then it's problematic. So here you have a case where Nikev, according to Rashi, he got a puncture. Lamata miatara means that it was closer to the tip of the member where it already began to decline. There was a hole there. Shekenegdo lamala, but it's on an angle. And it's on an angle, the hole, so that it actually, the other end of the hole punctures lamala. And closer to the body in the member above the atara. So now, there, Savar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Lachshure. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba want to say it's mutar, or he's mutar lavol bakal, he's not a problem because it began, the hole began lower down by the atara. Similarly, Rabbi Yasi, Achamar Rabbi Shu ben Levi, atara koshi me'akevet. Any piece is me'akev. Now, the language here is a little difficult because it is koshu ba'atara. Therefore, Tosfot has a different interpretation, and it is that Tosfot, instead of saying that the injury is on an angle, says the atara is on an angle. That the atara itself, the slope of the atara is different from the top than it is from the bottom. And therefore, when you have a puncture that goes straight through, you could have a puncture where it's not an angle, it's straight, but on one end, it is closer to the body than the atara. On the other end, it is still within the area of the atara. And that's what it means over here, the malo and the mato. So the malo mi atara means it was above the atara. Below, it was inside the atara, because the nature of the atara is to be on an angle. It doesn't decline, it doesn't move towards the tip from the top and bottom at the same angle, or the same point, and therefore you could have a possible injury where one of the parts of the injury on the top is outside the atara, whereas the one at the bottom is still inside the atara. Because of that, you'll have an injury that on one side is inside the atara, on one side is not. And again, then, atara koshi me'akevet. That anywhere is problematic. Again, Tosfot says the same thing, that anywhere where you have a puncture that's outside the atara, that is considered to be problematic. Right? Now, vim nishtayer me'atara. If there's any part of the atara remaining, even the smallest amount, then he's not considered to be a krut shofcha. Even if there's a string's worth, a small amount, alpnei kula, opnei ruba. When you have a circumference of the atara that's left, do you need an entire circumference that has a koshu to classify them as not being a krut shofcha? Or is rov enough? Rov of the circumference enough? Amrle rova tosfala ravina, mlochut alpnei ruba, the klape resha. It says it has to be rov, not the whole thing. Rov is sufficient. But he also says, klape resha. It has to be on top. Meaning that if you have rove, rove can be in two different ways. You can have a rove that creates, basically it's a U shape. So the U shape, where is the gap in the U shape? Is the gap towards the bottom? Or is the gap towards the top? So that's what he says, klape resha. That the gap has to be towards the bottom, and the rove has to be on the top. So the shape of the horseshoe that is still there, that surrounds it, is from the top, and the opening is at the bottom where you don't have a piece, that the atara is missing. So from the top you have the atara all the way around, except the bottom piece is missing, and that's how you get the rov. Amar Rav Huna, now we have a machloket about this. Kikumus, kshera, kimarzev, psula. If it's like a kumus is a quill, so if he has the end of the member is sliced on an angle, as she says, it's on an angle, and therefore it creates a shape like a quill, or kimarzev, if it's like a gutter. A gutter is not cut at an angle, it's just straight, but it has the equivalent of what looks like a gutter. You have walls on both sides, but it's not covered on the top. So these two injuries. Rav Huna says, kukumus kshera. If it's like a quill, it's kshera. Kimarzev, it's psula. Why? Hai shalit ba'avira, v'ajlo shalit ba'avira. It's a difference about whether the air can get to it or not. Now, the belief of the Gemara, and this is again problematic, is that the zera has to be nitbashel, has to be heated. And the zera, by being heated, is what makes it active and gives it the ability to procreate. It actually turns out, scientifically, it's just the opposite. Because the production of sperm is increased by lower temperatures, and that's why the testicles hang away from the body to keep them at lower temperatures. But the Gemara believed that the heating of the zera was important over here. Whether it's for the lubrication or for the liquidation of the zerot, that was important. Therefore, kukumus, when it's cut on the angle, there's more surrounding it, and it protects it from being exposed. Therefore, it's heated up, and it's good. Whereas the marzeb, which is open all the way along, because it's always severed at the top, it's not at an angle, there's more exposure to the air, and therefore it won't work, and he will be a krut shofcha. On the other hand, Rav Chista amar kimarzeb kshera, he says just the opposite. Rav Chista says if it's like a gutter, then it's kshira, kukumus, psula. If it's like on an angle like a quill, then psula. Hai garid, vai lo garid. He says that the heating of the zera is caused by the friction with the woman. So the more surface area that you have, the more friction that will be created. So a marzev, which has a larger surface area, creates the friction to create the heating. Whereas the kumus doesn't have that larger surface area, and therefore it will not heat up the zera. Amarova, Kavate the Rav Huna mistavra. Like Rav Huna makes more sense. Hai lo shalit bar vira. Bahai Shalit ba avira, because of what he said before, that the exposure to the air. Vi mishum griduta. What about the fact that the friction causes the heating? Midahava barza de chavita. It's the same thing as a tap of a barrel. The way that you put in a tap to a barrel is that you have a hole in the barrel, and then you insert the tap into the hole. The tap itself is not a circular pipe that goes in there. It's shaped like it has a puncture. It's similar to a quill. It looks like a quill where one side is long and the other, and it's sharp so that you can twist it in or you can push it in. And despite the fact that one side is longer than the other, it's still able to enter fully and fill in the hole. So the same thing over here in terms of the friction. The kumos will have the same friction or the same ability to fill in the area within the woman, and it won't be a problem. So Amar Le Ravina the Mreimar, Hachi Amar Marzuch Mishmei the Rapapa, Hilchata, the Loch is Ben Kikumus, Ben Kikumar Zev Kshera. Whether it's shaped like Kikumus or Marzev, it's Kshera. Miu, Mibayle the Matamatara, Olamala. So then, but he sends him afterwards and he asks him a question. Does that mean only if it's above the Atara or even the below the Atara? Pshita, the Lamala Miatara? Pshita that we're talking about above the Atara, closer to the body. If you're talking about an area that includes the Atara itself, then afilu nichrata gid nami. Even if it's completely severed there, it's fine. Because we said before, as long as there's the smallest amount of the Atara left, you're fine. So why do you need marzev or kukumus? Any amount that's left there is sufficient. So here the injury must have been where it was above the area of the Atara. And the question is, if the gid is severed in such a manner above that area, what's the halacha? So then, Ravina, the shibushi mirei marhu debayi. He was trying to trip up Mereimar, meaning that he was testing him whether he really knew the sugya. So he asked the question, even though it was obvious, to Mereimar because he wanted him to be sure that he really knew the sugya. And so he challenged him with something that was simple to bring him back to the core of the sugya, to know that the Mala Miatara versus the Mata Miatara makes the difference. The Marzev and Kumos is just a sideshow. That's okay. Once we're talking about the Mala Miatara, then this is the din. But the main difference is whether it's above or below the Atara. That's the main distinction in the sugya. There was this incident in Matamachsia. So when he came before Mar Bar Ravashi, where he came to Mar Bar Ravashi, it says Shafya Mar Bar Ravashi Kukumus Vakshere. He came before Ravashi and he had a gid that was shaped like a marzev, like a gutter. Mar Ravashi was not only a posek, he was a posek that could do some surgery on you and make it so that it was okay. What did he do? The person came in Gamarzev and he sliced it on an angle to make it like a kumus. And then he was machshirit. So he came there with Kimar Zev, and he said, I hold like Rav Huna that Amar Zev is problematic. So then he did the surgery, made him into a kumos, and said it was kasher. So this is a one-stop shop with Mar Bar Ravashi. You get your surgery and your psak halach all done in one place. Ha'uavda ava pumpadita, istateim gufta deshichvat zerek, va'apik memakom ktanim. The semen, or the area where the semen comes from, was plugged up. And the semen then came out of the urinary tract and said, Sarah Rabbi Barabai Lachshure, Rabbi Barabai thought to make him kasher, and Rabbi Mishum Da'ata Mimulai Amritu Mili Mulaita. It says, because you are Mumulai, you say these terrible things. Now, Mumulai, Rashi says, is because you're from Beit Eli, who are going to be cut off, who are Umlalim, that die early. Therefore, you said words that make no sense are going to be cut off. It says, Rabbi Barabai, and we know from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Abai is from Beit Eli. And so since he's from Beit Eli, they're going to die early. He says, because you're from these families, they're going to be cut off. Therefore, you say these words are going to be cut off. Bimkoma mevashla, shlom bimkoma lo mevashla. When it comes out through the reproductive tract, it gets heated up, and it's efficacious. The semen works. But when it goes through the urinary tract, it doesn't get heated up, and therefore it's not going to work. Tosfos gives an alternative to Mimulai over here and says Mimulai is a place. People there never got gray hair, because they all died when they were young. Why did they die when they were young? Because they're from Beit Eli. So he says to him, you're Mimulai, you're from that place Mimulai, because he was also from Beit Eli. Therefore, you set off words that are Mimulai. It's similar to Rashi, just not as harsh, but a similar type of statement. Now, medically, this is very difficult, because in the male reproductive system, the urethra carries both the urine and the semen, and there is no different tract. Now, further back in the system, it is true that what the Gemara describes here as being similar, there are two tracts. There is a reproductive tract and a urinary tract, but that's very far back in the body. It's before you reach the member. There is an area where you have a duct that allows the semen to enter into the urethra. There is two tracts until that point in time, and the Gemara talks about a skin, the klipat ha-shum, a very thin piece of skin that divides between them, which is true, very far back in the system. But here the Gemara seems to be talking about out on the urethra, and I'm not sure if the Gemara here extrapolated from a woman who has two different tracts, one urinary tract and one reproductive tract, and the Gemara just assumes that the male is the same, it's just not visible to them. And that's why they're saying this, but there is some medical issue with this because, again, the tract uses the urethra for both of them, and therefore there's no evidence that what it means that he's coming out in the urinary tract. It always comes out in the urinary tract. So the injury would have to be pretty far back in the system in order for that to be by the duct that allows the semen into the urethra, which again, I don't know if that's what they were referencing over here, but just know that that is an issue that has to be resolved with this Gemara. Okay, we'll stop over here on the second line on the top of Ayin Vav Amud Aleph.